Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd here, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk, of course, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'm flying solo, but only temporarily today. Drance, of course, not on the show on Friday because he was traveling. So he's on the ground doing some boots on the ground reporting at Canucks practice in Chicago. He was there tweeting the lines. He's talking to Rick Tocchet, talking to the players right now. So we will get Drance connected and on the show at some point here, probably for the second hour, maybe even before that. But at least for this first segment, you're stuck with just me. Drance will be on a little bit later. I'll have the latest from Canucks practice in Chicago as they get set to wrap up this road trip against the Blackhawks tomorrow. So that's what's going on with Drance. He'll be by later on in the show. At 12:30, Drance or no Drance, Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks, he'll join me. So we'll have a chance to chat with Batch about what he's seeing from the Canucks in their recent couple of victories. And hopefully we'll get a chance to play a little bit of Rick Tocchet audio later on in the show as well. As mentioned, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send in your questions, your thoughts. Canucks have won two in a row. Get your questions in to the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650, 650. Lots to get into today, wrapping up the weekend, looking ahead to the week to come for the Canucks. Let's go right in to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 21st. The headline is, of course, that the Canucks beat Philadelphia 3-0 on Saturday for their second straight win on the road, and really their first comfortable win of this season, right? Of course, win number one, the JT Miller goal against Florida. You're in overtime. You're happy that you get the win, but there's always a little bit of discomfort, nerves, risk that you're not going to get the win when it goes to overtime. That was the first, no doubt about it, comfortable win of the season for the Canucks. Now, that's not to say it was a perfect game, far from it, right? And there were certainly moments, I think especially in the second half of that game, where you could say maybe the Canucks were a little loose. Philly had some scoring chances. They hit some posts. Kevin Lankinen was pretty busy. He had to make some good saves. We'll talk more about Lankinen in a second. And that's all true. But it's also the case that that game was never in doubt, right? Especially once it got to 3-0. There was never a moment where the Canucks were on the ropes. It ended 3-0. So, yeah, you can critique, they were a little loose. Maybe they give Philly too much in the, especially the final frame, the final half of that game. I think that's fair. But again, there was never any moment where they had to turn it on, right? Where their backs were against the wall and they said, uh-oh, we got to stop this one from slipping away like that Calgary game did. So, realistically, they were in control for the entirety of that game. And, you know, you can look at the Flyers' schedule. Obviously, that did them no favors, right? Being out on the road for four games to start the season, not just on the road, but across the continent in the on the West Coast to start the season. And by the way, just imagine how up in arms we would be here in Vancouver if the Canucks had that situation to start their schedule, right? Four games out east before coming back for your home opener. So that's not doing Philly any favors, but the Canucks took advantage of a less talented, tired team. That's what good teams do, right? You can only play who's on the ice in front of you in their specific situation. So I'm not going to take too much away from the Canucks based on the fact that Philly was in a tough spot. The Canucks won comfortably. That's what you're supposed to do against teams that are in a tough spot. And again, as much as it was a little sloppy, right? It wasn't a picture-perfect game for the Canucks by any means. They never had that one breakdown that could have given Philly life, right? That could have sparked the crowd, stopped them from booing their team for a little bit. That could have given the Flyers that little bit of confidence they needed to really get back in the game. The Canucks never had that moment. Again, to me, that's a sign of a professional, talented team. Now, Kevin Lankinen, obviously a big part of that story, right? Because there were defensive breakdowns. They didn't end up in the back of the net, because Kevin Lankinen had another really, really strong game. And I think if we're talking just about the on-ice portion of that game in Philly and what's really going to matter going forward, Lankinen's the biggest story. Tyler Myers, maybe the biggest story overall. We'll get to that in a second here. But again, from an on-ice perspective, what did we learn about the Canucks? What's going to count as they continue their season here? I think it's Kevin Lankinen. He has been very, very sharp. It sounds like he has taken over the starter's job right now temporarily, and all of this is pending what happens with Thatcher Demko down the road, of course. But there's no denying that he has been much stronger in net than Artur Shelov's so far. Very small sample sizes, obviously. What, two games for Shelov's, three for Lankinen? But you can hear just in the way that Rick Tocchet speaks about Lankinen, right? His commentary after the game. He looks big in the net. He's not, even when the Canucks, the rest of the Canucks, the five skaters are running around a little bit, Lankinen's calm. He's in position to make the saves. And you can tell how much that means to Rick Tocchet while his team is still trying to totally recapture that lockdown defensive identity that they had and really perfected last season. So right now, it's Lankinen's crease. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to play, you know, the next eight games in a row or anything like that. It's true that the Canucks have a pretty light schedule. Again, a couple days off here, right? Sunday and Monday off. Then they'll play Tuesday. They don't play till Saturday again. So it's spaced out here. Lankinen can get a bit of a run. Still have time to get those rest days in. Recovery, you know, recover a little bit between starts. It's Lankinen's net until something changes right now. And very, very good news for the Canucks that one of these goalies has stepped up and is performing really well in Thatcher Demko's absence. And that was always a big part of the reason why I was maybe slightly less concerned about Demko's absence than a lot of other people in the market. Not that I thought, you know, hey, Lankinen's going to be amazing or Shelov's is going to be amazing, but that there was at least enough of a chance from one of those goalies that you would get really strong performances or strong enough performances in the early going to hold down the fort, to give the Canucks a chance to win. And Lankinen is certainly doing that, at least for the first three games, every game he's started so far. Now, the other interesting question for me, and look, who knows when this is going to become relevant, what happens when Demko comes back? I know we've heard, and I know Drance has reported, that the team is very interested in potentially carrying three goalies, but if the performance stays roughly the same between Lankinen and Shelov's, and then Demko comes back healthy, I mean, Shelov's would pretty clearly be number three in the pecking order at that point. And so, okay, hey, you want to carry three goalies, you want to give Demko as much time to rest and recover as possible, but how much playing time would that actually leave for Artur Shelov's? This is still a young goalie that the organization is high on. They have high hopes for him. In order to develop, you got to think he needs reps. I'm not concerned about that in the short term here. If they're going to give Lankinen the starter's workload, that's fine. But if you're starting to project out for the rest of the season, a three-goalie situation, you know, I think you could buy that with Shelov's and his development if he was the clear number two. But if Lankinen continues to outplay him and he's the guy taking the bulk of the backup job when Thatcher Demko is back, we'll see what that means for the plan to carry three goalies and what it means for Artur Shelov. Could he potentially be bound for the AHL at some point here? We'll see. It's very early. Again, he's only played two games so far. He could go on a run, have a shutout in his next performance, and take the net back. But right now, it is Lankinen's crease to run with. Okay, other storylines from that game. I mean, first of all, again, huge congratulations to Tyler Myers. Plays his 1,000th game in the NHL. I think especially cool to see, given that the last time he was playing Philly, just over a week ago, before that game, right, he had to leave early. He was lying on the ice. It didn't look great, and there was some concern, certainly for me, that, uh-oh, he was so close to getting to this milestone. Is it going to be pushed off to some, you know, undetermined time in the future? Instead, he doesn't miss a game. He's been so durable, so consistently in the lineup and available since he's joined the Vancouver Canucks. And you saw that again with Tyler Myers. So a fitting way for him to get his 1,000th game. And just really great to see. I mean, one, he had a great game. Fantastic pass. Got to be one of the best passes, best assists of Tyler Myers' career to set up Brock Besser. Active, played a ton, big part of the penalty kill that was successful. And then also just great to see his teammates get the chance to celebrate him, right? And you could see what he means to the team, how much they appreciate him, how much they like him, the t-shirts, the celebrations after, Brock Besser, how excited he was that Myers set him up for that goal. Anytime any player gets to 1,000 games, it's a big, big deal. Fantastic for Tyler Myers. Huge achievement for him. Congratulations to him and his family, and it's going to be special, I'm sure, at Rogers Arena on Saturday when the Canucks do the official ceremony and really get to honor Tyler Myers as well. Some other things worth keeping track of, and we'll get the update from practice at some point here. JT Miller, of course, played, didn't take faceoffs, though, after seeming to hurt himself on the opening draw. I think he only took one for the remainder of the game. Brock Besser got a chance to do his thing in the faceoff circle for a little bit in that one. So that's at least something worth monitoring. Of course, Miller was dealing with, quote, some stuff in the preseason. That's why he only played one game. Leaves early, comes back, not taking faceoffs. The health status of JT Miller, not a concern, but something worth monitoring. On the radar, something worth paying attention to here as the Canucks going to finish the road trip in Chicago. We'll talk more about everything that unfolded in that game, some takeaways that we have and all of that. Just a couple other quick things I want to mention. Teddy Bluger, I think, is having a really nice start to the season. That third line, him with Sherwood and Danton Heinen, looks like they've found a little bit of a spark, a little bit of chemistry there, something that the Canucks can rely on. Another solid game, I thought, as well, for the Eric Brandstrom and Vincent Desharnais pair, and the dynamic that Eric Brandstrom can bring to this lineup is pretty interesting. Now, you know we can't move on before the mandatory Elias Pettersson check-in. That's a mandatory part of the show right now. And I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, but of course, anytime there's great consternation about how your highest paid player is performing, how a guy who's supposed to be a superstar is performing, yes, that's something we're going to check in on regularly on this show. So the mandatory Elias Pettersson check-in here, more progress. We said it was progress after the Florida game. I think that was a better performance for Elias Pettersson. Obviously had the assist, which is nice. You want to see that production. There has to be a lot of production for Elias Pettersson. I thought more so than the assist, though, there was just more purpose to his game. It looked like he wanted the puck. And I think we always tend to focus on what he looks like in the offensive zone for obvious reasons. Again, he's got to produce. But on Saturday, there were moments where he actually carried the puck assertively through the neutral zone with speed. And that's a huge part of his game. When Pettersson's been at his best in his career, he's a very effective puck carrier. He's a very good transitional player, right? That's why the Canucks have typically tilted the ice and controlled play whenever he's out there. Because it's not just what he does in the offensive zone, it's the way he helps them get from the defensive zone into the offensive zone. And as much as he needs to produce, and he absolutely does, the production has to come in bunches. To be a true superstar, it's actually not enough for Elias Pettersson just to put up points. He's got to do more of that play in all three zones. We've seen the defensive side of it, I think it's fair to say, this season, but that neutral zone element, transitioning play, driving play through the neutral zone, helping the team get set up in the offensive end, that's been missing. And that's a huge part of the value that Elias Pettersson brings. I thought you started to see that. Far from a finished product for Elias Pettersson, obviously. Long, long way to go, and you would love to see him have a true breakout game soon, right? A true game where it's not, oh, you know, hey, that was progress, but a true Elias Pettersson is back game. I think we're trending in that direction. I think there's been legitimate, meaningful progress, but until he's doing that consistently, until he's having A-plus performances consistently, it is going to remain a big, big talking point. And of course, that brings us to the broadsheet section of the whiteboard here, where we'll talk more about Elias Pettersson. And as I said, anytime you have a player of his caliber, of his stature and profile around the league with his salary, who's struggling, who doesn't look himself out of the gates, didn't look himself, obviously, in the playoffs for the second half of last year, that's not just going to be a story here. That's going to be a story around the league. Elliot Friedman kind of had some homework assigned or assigned some homework to himself on last week's 32 Thoughts that he was going to do some digging into what's going on with Elias Pettersson. He had the results of that digging on the one that dropped today. So here is Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts weighing in on Elias Pettersson.
I think Pettersson is one of those guys that he reads everything, or he's aware of everything that's said about him. And honestly, Kyle, really? I think that's one thing that he's going to have to move past. Because I think in moments like this, when you're struggling, and, you know, hey, I always say about markets like Vancouver, the rewards are high, but the risks are high, right?
Yeah.
And so when it's going bad, one of the best stories I ever heard was Jamie Baker, the former NHLer, now in media.
Here in Ottawa.
He told me a great story of when he got traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs, Wendell Clark pulled him aside and said, understand this, you're never as good as they say you are, and you're never as bad as they say you are. You've got to ride a flat line as much as you can. You can't go up and down. It can't be peaks and valleys. You got to ride the flat line. And I think, and I suspect, this is my opinion, because I think Patterson is well aware of everything that is said about him, I think he rides the peaks and valleys. And I think that that is the thing that he has to get out of his system. When he's struggling and it's not going well, I think it's something he's really aware of what's being said about him, and he has to stop that. And that's my constructive criticism for Patterson. You know, Kyle, one thing about players is players used to say, like, you guys in the media, we don't understand. You don't know what it's like to have 16 or 20,000 people, or if you're playing football, like 80 to 100,000 people booing you. But you can't use that line anymore, because now in the social media age, if people are mad at us or people don't like us, we hear it. Like, it comes right at us. We get the same vitriol athletes do. Everybody does. So I know what that's like to go through that, and I understand how you have to start to block it out and the techniques you have to use to block it out. Because if you let everything get to you, if you get every tweet or every X post or every Instagram comment get to you, you're going to go insane. And I think you get healthier as you learn those. Kyle, I know everyone loves you, so you never get this hate. But as someone who's been on the end of it beforehand, I understand how you have to learn to weed it out. There's a difference between constructive criticism, which we all need, and just pure savagery, right? So I think that's one thing I think Pettersson's going to have to get better at is blocking that out. And I think it'll really help him.
That is Elliot Friedman speaking about Elias Pettersson on the latest 32 Thoughts, out now, of course, with Kyle Bukauskas in there as well. And, you know, again, that's not just Friedman sharing his uneducated opinion on what he thinks is going on with Elias Pettersson. That's what he's saying and what he's how he's weighing in after doing some digging, after talking to people around the league. And, you know, that matches. We've had this conversation on the crossover with Donny and Dolly, right? And Rick Dollywall has brought up how intense the noise is in Vancouver, especially when you're a star player who's struggling. And Elliot Friedman backing that up, that he thinks that is contributing to Elias Pettersson's struggles. And I don't, you know, I think what's smart about how Friedman frames that is he's not bringing it up as an excuse for Elias Pettersson, right? He's not saying, well, and it's out of his control and that's the situation. It's just, you know, he's screwed because there's so much noise around him, right? He's framing it as constructive criticism. I'm sympathetic to, you know, if we assume that that is a big driver of what's going on here, right? We take Elliot Friedman's theory as we accept it as at least partially true for now. You know, I'm sympathetic. That is a tough situation to be in. But from Elias Pettersson's perspective, okay, it's tough. It's not changing. This is what Vancouver is like. Once you sign that big deal, even before you sign that big deal, if you're a star player on the team, but especially once you sign that big deal, yeah, your performance is going to come under a lot of scrutiny. So as Elliot Friedman said there, you're not going to change that. You have to be able to still perform in that situation. And I would say the good news, if you're a Canucks fan really hoping that Elias Pettersson gets back to the old Elias Pettersson, is he's not the first player in the NHL who's had to go through something like this, right? Like, this is a skill that you can learn. You can undergo that transformation from caring too much what outside people are saying, what the outside noise is, to learning to accept it, to learning to block it out, to learning to perform even in those adverse situations. That's not a unique path that Elias Pettersson would have to tread here. There's people around the league he can turn to ask for it, to look how did you do it, right? Now, maybe this is a more extreme version in terms of the drop-off that we've seen from Elias Pettersson. And again, I'm sympathetic, but ultimately it's, okay, that sucks, but you're going to have to find a way to deal with it. Because ultimately the only thing that's going to change that noise, that's going to lessen that noise, again, I said this on the crossover recently here, is the only thing that's going to change the noise is him performing really, really well. So you got to find a way to perform really, really well and stop that noise. And as Elliot Friedman said, just ignore us. That's probably just step number one. Just ignore us and ignore what we're saying. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'm sure we'll get more into the Elias Pettersson conversation throughout the course of the show here, but I also want to touch on a couple of other things in the whiteboard. We'll move on to the lineup notes. Canucks practice today in Chicago. No JT Miller. He got the maintenance day tag. Now, sometimes, as we all know, that has turned into more of a maintenance day where the Canucks are concerned. But right now, maintenance day for JT Miller. I think the fact that he did come back and play a pretty normal minutes load against the Flyers suggests that he's on track to play against Chicago as well. We'll see what his faceoff status is. But no JT Miller at practice. In his absence, Pius Suter moved up to the top line between Jake DeBrusque and Brock Besser. The rest of the lineup was the same. So still Pettersson with Hoglander and Garland, Bluger, Heinen, and Sherwood. Arshdeep Bains jumping into Pius Suter's spot on the fourth line with Nils Amon and Sprong. Dakota Joshua skating with the main group in a non-contact jersey, but great to see him still continuing to participate in these practices along with the regular group. And then the defense pairs, no change. Hughes, Hronek, Susie Myers, Brännström, Desharnais, Noah Juulsen, the extra, no Derek Forbort, who remains away from the team for personal reasons. So it looks like if JT Miller is good to go, and we'll talk more about Drance, about that with Drance. He was there, obviously able to speak to Rick Tocchet after practice. We'll get his perspective on that. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet later on in the show, but it certainly looks like if JT Miller is good to go, then the Canucks are going to ice the same lineup against Chicago that won in Philadelphia, and that makes a lot of sense. Again, even if it was far from a perfect performance, I didn't see anything in that game that would lead me to say, you got to juggle the lines. I like what Pettersson's doing with Hoglander and Garland. I like what that third line is doing. Brännström and Desharnais were giving you a much different dynamic on the third pair than they had for the first couple of games through the season. So it makes a lot of sense that we're seeing the same kind of thing rolled out by Rick Tocchet at practice, and I would expect to see something very similar, if not identical, against the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow night. Playoff update, Canucks, no surprise here. Still sitting pretty with a 94% chance to make the playoffs per Dom's model, projected to finish with 105 points. And look, they've got a 600 points percentage now, right? They won a couple games in a row. It was so early, they've completely erased that mini stumble out of the gate. It is a non-factor. It is in the distant past. It's over. They've got a 600 winning percentage. They can go forward. It's done. And now they're basically back to exactly where they started the season in terms of the projection and the model, Dom's model, with them, again, sitting very, very pretty to make the playoffs. All right, that's the whiteboard for today. Send your text in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As I mentioned, Drance is on the road in Chicago. I believe he's finished with his practice duties in Chicago, so he's going to join us for the next segment. We'll talk to Drance, and Brendan Batchelor will join us as well next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.